The time is, looks like we missed 8:30 a little bit, 8:50. And with this is Representative Moses, Representative Foster, myself, Commissioner Meyer, Vice Chairman Stoltz, Representative Tulo, Representative Hawker, Representative Weirath, Representative Jewell is also here. This morning we're going to take up three bills. First one is Senate Bill 310, Employment of Prisoners. And Mr. Peterson, staff to Senator Green, is going to be presenting this bill to us. Welcome to House Finance, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Finance, my name is Darwin Peterson, staff to the Senate Finance Committee, Senator Green. And our committee starts in about 10 minutes, so with your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I'll give some introductory remarks and then pass it off to the very capable Portia Parker from the Department of Corrections, who will walk you through some questions if you have some. Senate Bill 310 is legislation that was introduced by the Senate Finance Committee at the request of the Department of Corrections to take care of the fact that the Alaska Correctional Industries Program was allowed to sunset on July 1st of 2005. And this bill reinstates and improves the prison employment program. Without this legislation, the work that's currently being performed in prisons around Alaska would have to cease. In addition, this bill also provides the necessary statutory authority for the state to take advantage of the critical federal prison industry enhancement programs, or PIE programs. As for the cost, Mr. Chairman, this won't be a burden on the state's general fund, since the entire program will be funded through program receipts. Furthermore, this bill allows the department to take deductions from the offender's wages to pay for the cost of confinement. The inmates are allowed to work toward financial responsibility by paying for the child support, victim restitution, criminal fines, civil judgments, and even the cost of their own utilities that they use while incarcerated. So that concludes my brief remarks, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or have Ms. Parker join me.
Okay, we do have a question. Is it for Mr. Peterson or Ms. Parker?
The most knowledgeable person with an answer.
All right, we'll try Mr. Peterson first.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question about the workman's comp issue at the end on Section 13 and Section 12 and the retroactivity. Can you explain that? And what, if there was a problem, or what, is there a legal issue?
My understanding, and Portia would be the best one to answer that question for Representative Stoltz, but through the chair, my understanding is there's language in the legislation that prohibits prisoners from receiving workers' comp. They're not state employees, so the repealers at the end would repeal the former statutory references to workers' comp, and it's reinserted in the legislation.
Mr. Chairman, point, does that mean that they're going to be under workers' compensation?
No. Okay. No, they will not. There's it's on page 4, section 5. There's a new subsection that's added that the state's department shall comply with federal and state health and safety regulations except for providing workers' compensation for the prisoners.
Representative Stoltz, do you have a follow-up?
Well, it looks like Ms. Parker's coming up. She might, and the reason for the retroactivity to 2005 would be my follow-up. Just anytime there's a repealer or retroactivity, I'm usually...
Yeah, I believe that's because the program in the commission was allowed to sunset on July 1st of 2005, so we want to go back to make sure that those prisoners that have been employed since that time are not eligible for workers' comp, is my understanding.
Okay. Well,
thank you. That's answered my question.
Okay. Anything else for Ms. Peterson? Okay.
Although someone else may get this question or know this question, I'm just assuming that the same DEC standards for health and safety apply in the prison as they do everywhere else.
My understanding that they do, but Ms. Parker, I'm sure can shed more light on that.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, very good. If there's no other questions for the sponsor, we'll let you go, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I want to welcome Representative Holt. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Foster, do you have a question for Mr. Peterson? Mm. Let it go here. I want to make sure you get your question.
Yeah, I just I remember back in the early 90s, there was a lot of controversy on prisoners doing vocational training and making chairs and tables and things out of wood and then selling them on the open market. And then cabinet makers and private enterprise were creating a fervor because they're competing with free labor, you know, making the same products. This doesn't do that, does it?
No, through the chair, Representative Foster, we had language in the legislation that was aimed at preventing any unfair competition in the private sector.
Okay.
And it was actually amended in the House State Affairs Committee. If you look on page 3, section 2, the bold underlined language specifies that the commissioner must consult with trade organizations.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, Ms. Parker. Portia Parker, if you want to join us, please. And are you Ms. Griffin? Okay, good. I have you on the list here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing the legislation so expeditiously. We appreciate that. Just to clarify one of the sections on the workers' comp, that the prisoners have always been exempt from workers' comp. This isn't anything new, but because the statutes were repealed, it needs to be reenacted and then retroactive to make sure that we're covered throughout the entire time since the statute was allowed to sunset. I think that Darwin pretty much covered most of the general reasons why we need the legislation. We do need this to continue doing what we're doing right now. This is not an expansion of what we're doing, but really let us continue and maintain the work programs we have, all of the inmate workers who work inside the facilities as well as in the industries, and we have a change to the ACI fund to receive supported services that if there are questions about that, Char Griffin is the best person to answer those questions. And other than that, we're just available for questions.
All right. Questions for Ms. Parker? Representative Stoltz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's on Section 8. I just want to make sure I understand that. Ms. Parker and I have been talking about procurement issues related to agricultural purchases of Alaskan grown products, and I just I want to better understand Section 8, whether this is just dealing with the procuring the labor services, or does it also include products?
Yes, I can. For the record, Char Griffin, Director of Admin Services, Department of Corrections. Procurements that the prison employment program will do for goods to make, for the raw goods to make, the products they sell, do fall under the procurement code. What doesn't fall under the procurement code is a contract with a private vendor. Because they would be the vendor buying the raw goods and selling the products. So ventures with private organizations, this does not make that private organization adhere to the state procurement code.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To add on to that a little bit, by having a non-competitive sealed bidding process, I guess my question is whether or not that's really in the best interest of the state at that point, and whether it's fair for the other people that have opportunities to sell to the correct decision.
Through the chair, there are pieces of this bill that avoid unfair competition. For instance, if we were to go into a free venture with a private organization, they would be required to pay minimum wage for the inmate labor. If we
go into a free venture where they're using a portion of our facility, they will lease that portion of the facility so that they experience the same cost drivers that another vendor would to avoid unfair competition.
Where is the oversight for that, Mr. Chair?
The oversight for the free ventures?
Look over your shoulder to make sure you're doing it correctly.
We, in the beginning of the bill, we do, in Section 2, the commissioner will be required to consult with local union organizations. The statute itself requires that offenders, that private industry pay minimum wage for offender labor.
Mr. Chairman, so it's in statute. We're required to pay minimum wage, or if it's a federal PI program, we're required to pay prevailing wage. That's in federal statute.
Which means what? What's prevailing wage?
It looks at the work that's being done and what is paid for that service in that region. And it may be higher than minimum wage.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question always is how we're putting this together, and then because you've got a package here, you don't just have wages, you have materials you're buying, then you're creating something, and when you create something new, of course it has some competitive advantages and disadvantages for the free market system. And I guess what we're concerned, I think Representative Stoltz was also alluding to, was that we don't want to be in his area, and I suppose where one of the places is, you could have a whole bunch of land. Maybe the state owns the land. They could go out and farm it, and then they could sell the farming products at less than market value. There's no reason they can't do that under this that I can see. And so if you can have lower cost labor and lower cost supplies, you certainly can have an economic advantage over to the farmers that are in the surrounding area.
Mr. Chairman, we whatever we grow and produce on the farm, we consume. We don't sell it. It's consumed by the Department of by prisoners in the Department of Corrections. We can't possibly produce enough to even feed just the prisoners in that region, let alone the rest of the state. So it's not. I don't think of that as a real problem or competition. We are not selling those products. We do sell some products, like the furniture shop that we have in Spring Creek. But what we have found is that we are not particularly competitive when it comes to prices. And so we haven't had that as a real, we have not experienced that as a real problem. The problem is it's a little more expensive or too expensive. The kind of products that we produce and sell hasn't been a real competitive problem with the private sector.
Just a slight follow-up on that, if I could, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
I understand that part. What I don't understand is the reduction of where you should be going out in the private sector and buying these items from local farmers, from local producers, and you're not, because you're supplanting that purchasing with, let's say, some other mechanism to provide the services to you.
Mr. Chairman, no, that's not really a problem. We purchase based on price and the competitive process. And I don't, even if we bought all Alaska grown, that wouldn't be enough to supply enough food for our institutions in state. So there may be other problems, price or how the procurement part works, but the Point Mac farm isn't what's prohibiting or in any way impacting whether we buy local produce or not. Because there's still plenty, we have more than we could purchase. They couldn't even supply the amount we consume every year.
Okay,
thank you very much. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Laura, think about it. There's probably a theoretical possibility that they could, create potato fields and carrot fields. But I don't, seeing the prison population and how inefficient they are, and they're not allowed to. These people, you're hardly allowed to make them break a sweat. I just they don't have the ethic of you and my valley farmers in the prison system, so I don't think they're going to be a competitor. I think in theory this would allow that they could, for example, put up potato fields and try to undercut Vanderweil and Hupert and Palmer, to the Mat-Su Borough School District Nutrition Center, but I don't think any of us think that the prison system is ever going to have the efficiencies of our surviving farmers. So I think in theory it could be a problem on ag, but I just don't think it ever gets there in reality.
After this
Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. Very good. Any other questions for Ms. Parker and Ms. Griffin? Okay, seeing none. Thank you. Actually, you might want to just stay there. Let's go ahead and take public testimony. Was there anyone online to testify? Okay. You're not letting the prisoners testify on this bill, is that? anyone here in the audience who wants to testify?
Mr. Chairman.
Any prisoners in the audience who want to testify? Representative Barber.
I appreciate the fact that this was a Senate bill, and I wondered what that was, why there were so many senators and staff over here, and then it dawned on me there's donuts in the back, so there had to be substantive reason why they would be here.
But I'm not even sure who brought the donuts and whose cell phone went off, but thank you.
I thought he was the mayor, Mr. Chairman. I thought he was the mayor of Seward. Might not be, but...
Mayor of Seward, okay.
I'm not sure.
All right.
We appreciate it.
Yes. Okay, so let's go ahead and close public testimony. There is an amendment. I have an amendment. I'll move Amendment 1.
Object.
And I'm going to let Ms. Parker explain my amendment. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the discussions that came up in a previous committee was whether we needed to reinsert the language of agency, public agency, that had been deleted on page 3, line 10, where individual private organization, and whether agency, a public agency, was covered under those two options. And we want to make it clear that we can still enter into a contract with a public agency to provide goods or services, going through all the same process as if we were going into an agreement with a private organization or an individual. And one of the things that we do right now, which we want to make sure wouldn't be excluded, is we do the laundry service here in Juneau for the Alaska Marine Highway. That kind of an agreement that, if it worked out, that would be something that we would be able to do. And we have consulted with the different union organizations who've been working with us on the legislation, and they have no problem with the amendment, so we would like to include that just to make sure that that option is available, potential in the future.
Okay. You got any questions on the amendment?
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Foster.
I just wanted to say this is one of the best amendments I've ever seen.
That is a good one.
Chairman, I saw some nodding heads from labor guys. I don't know if it's contentment from the donuts or happiness with your bill.
But it seems.
Yeah, Bob, what is your cell phone number?
I'll remove my objection.
Okay, the objection's been removed. Amendment 1 is accepted. Okay, we have back before us the bill as amended. Any other questions, comments? Let's see. We do have a fiscal note. Let's see, fiscal note 1 is 0. Fiscal note 2 indicates a fund source transfer of $3.1
million. The fiscal note is a fund source change. Previously, we had the Correctional Industries Fund that funded all of the programs. They made their expenditures out of it, collected their revenues into it. We are asking that it be changed to Receipt Support Services so that there's not an ongoing fund, that the whole program is funded with Receipt Support Services.
Okay. Makes sense. All right. Any questions on the versus Schnell?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I don't have necessarily a question on the fiscal note. I'm sorry I was late and tied up on some other things, but And I haven't had a solid opportunity to read this. Does this allow employment outside the prison facilities? Or is it strictly inside the prison facilities? Now apparently working with private organizations or public agencies?
Mr. Chairman, it covers both. It allows us to continue doing what we're doing right now, which is both work inside the facilities as well as entering into agreements with other private or public agencies outside the facility. Most of them work on site, but the private venture or the agreement where we're working with someone either has the employees working on site at the facility. The only time we're actually off site is somewhere like Mount McKinley Meet, or they're doing conservation projects with other agencies like the railroad or APD. Sometimes we do brush clearing for APD or some of the other local governments. Are there other off-site? I believe that's all we do actually when we transport prisoners off-site to do projects.
Okay, well, I'm thinking more along the lines of like shoveling snow at senior citizen complexes, things like this. Let's say you go to the Department of Corrections and try to broker a deal to be able to use prisoners that met certain qualifications. I'm sure that any prisoner that's shipped or that's used outside the confines of the prison walls meet certain criteria, and that you could actually come and try to provide a service to senior housing or to other service organizations like that at a maybe a more reasonable price, if that's what we want to call it, but provide a public service to help and pay for the debt that they've incurred to society, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, in those agreements, on page 3, in section 2, we have to confer with the local unions as well as ensure that we will not be displacing employed workers or workers who are available to do those jobs who have not committed crimes and who are incarcerated. So that's...
I totally agree with that.
Okay.
Not necessarily just union organizations, but all companies.
And
we need to really differentiate there between a union company and a non-union company. And I do agree that I don't want these guys taking jobs that other contractors or other people in the community provide. But there are things that happen in areas, and you brought up one like road clearing or brush clearing, things like that. Now, there always are contractors that'll do that. Now, whether that's the price that somebody wants to pay, that's a different story. I thought of a lot of things that I think that we could use prison labor on, and I don't want to say chain gangs because that brings you back a picture of the 60s, but I think there's lots of services that they could provide out there for the public that are of a benefit, and not only that, but it gets them out into the public and helps them repay the debt to their debt to society, and I think in the long run makes them feel better about themselves, and hopefully when they do get out they have a better opportunity because of crafts that they learn to be able to stay outside those prison walls.
Okay.
So as long as the option might be available, then I'm okay with that. Thanks, Portia.
Okay. Thank you. Go, Chairman Schnault. Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Chairman, Ms. Parker. I was thumbing through and I was trying to find the, seems like in my community over the years they've used prison labor and community service requirement people, but it's been prison labor to come in and do community projects. Is that all volunteer on behalf of the prisoners if they do that, or do the organization, whether it's a Rotary Club doing a park cleanup, or and does that still happen on a frequent basis?
Mr. Chairman, we do have prisoners who generally they're community custody prisoners or in halfway houses who have a court order to do community work service. and those are generally the prisoners who are used to pick up garbage along the highways, do cleanup projects, particularly in community, whatever qualifies as the community work service that they are involved in, which is different than the what this legislation covers, which is employment of prisoners.
Very good. If there's no other questions or comments, Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. I'll go ahead and move SB 310 out of the Finance Committee as amended with the attached fiscal notes with individual recommendations.
Okay. Any objections? Bill passes the committee. Thank you both for joining us today. Yes.
I just wanted to recognize Alex Etheridge here. He's 10 years old. He's 5'3" and a half, and I think this is bring your boy or grandson in this case to work today, and he wanted to come up here and watch us work. So I just wanted us to wish him a good welcome.
Welcome, Alex. Thanks for joining us. As many youth as possible watch us work or not work, whatever the case may be. Okay, let's go on now to House Bill 496, Contributions from Permanent Fund Dividend. Just a second. Let's see. Representative Foster. The bill was last heard April 18th. Public testimony was taken and closed. If you can hold off just a second, okay? Actually, I'm going to ask Ms. Cunningham to come up and kind of refresh my memory here. If you could just slide over or take a seat. I think we had Representative Weirach make an amendment, and then Representative Chenault objected, being the person mm-hmm. that he is. And
very objectionable, yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
And then he was running the meeting, and so then he just postponed or adjourned. So, what am I missing here, Ms. Cunningham? Representative Foster?
Yeah, I had a question. The reason I objected is it's because it's Suzanne's birthday.
Ah. Oh.
And we needed her to come up front so we could sing happy birthday. Mr. Co-Chairs, I've watched her here over the years, and she's really the only one that's really versed in all of these bills that we go and fiscal notes and everything. And sometimes I'm not sure what to do, and I watch her signaling the mic on how to vote, and she always goes like this if it's a good bill, and then like this if it's a really bum bill. So she's really versed in all this stuff. I wonder if Fairbanks can help us sing happy birthday to Suzanne today.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Suzanne. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Would it be in order to make a motion to give her the day off?
No.
I have to check.
Can we take a vote? That's
Mr. Chairman. Yes.
Can we take a vote for that?
Yeah. You guys just don't want to meet today because she's the one that puts everything together. She's the greatest. Representative Weirach.
To help, I would throw Amendment 1.
All right.
I will remove my objection for adjourning the meeting.
Okay, great. Yeah, we adjourned the meeting and we haven't got back to this bill, although there is a Senate companion that we're waiting to come over. Okay, now you can join us. For the record, if you can refresh our memories on what this bill does.
Yeah. And for the record, my name is Louis Flora, staff to Representative Seaton and the House State Affairs Committee. This is a House State Affairs bill. It's a companion to the Senate version, Senate State Affairs, and it allows eligible charitable organizations, the campuses of the University of Alaska system, vocational education organizations, and community foundations to be eligible to be a part of a permanent fund dividend checkoff program where an applicant on the electronic permanent fund dividend application will select a organization to donate a portion of the permanent fund to support that organization. We produced a
CS, or a work draft version S. I believe you have that before you. And that version incorporates a suggestion or a request by the Permanent Fund Dividend Division to create a temporary application process that will allow the program to begin this year. It's a 3-year pilot program. Sunsets in 2009, and the costs are going to be underwritten by the administrative costs will be underwritten by the Rasmussen Foundation. And this version with the temporary application process will allow it to get started this year, and then regs will be written for the following years to implement the program. There was an additional modification that took out in the title the word positive before youth development program, and also in the bill there was a reference to primary purpose of I believe the organization for vocational education. We took out those words as they were viewed to be too subjective and might leave the state vulnerable to an equal protection challenge after reviewing that with the Department of Law. So those are the two changes, and I'm here for questions. I do have a response to the issues raised by Representative Weirach. If now would be the time to do that.
Okay, why don't we, there is a new CS that I just found, so why don't we go ahead and adopt the blank committee substitute for House Bill 496, version 24, LS1793/S, Cook, dated 4/24/06 as the working document before the committee. May I have that motion? Okay. The motion has been moved. Is there objection? We now have the blank committee substitute before us. Questions? Representative Warwick, do you have a question? If not, I have some.
If he wants to respond to my question, okay.
Go ahead.
The first issue that was raised was the dollars versus percent for the amount that can be contributed, and that's found on page 2, beginning on line 2 and going through line 3. And the thought there having the allowance for an applicant to check off both a dollar amount and a percentage was that it gives if you leave it at the dollar amount, then it's capped at 100, and then that would prevent them from selecting more money. And if they want to, and if you deleted the percentages, then they couldn't contribute their whole dividend if they wished. And then if you left it with just the percentage, then they, because you're making the selection prior to knowing the amount of the dividend, that would create some possibly fuzzy math. And so if there was a way to address this issue to simplify it, that the sponsor would not object, but we felt this was the easiest way to address it. Then the Representative Weirach had a suggestion to, in his amendment, to delete the reference to the arts that eligible. That's a policy. And then we felt that including children.
Not perceptive.
Not going to do that either.
Okay. So that's handled by youth development, and the total budget, the audit, and there's an audit requirement in the eligibility criteria on page 3, line 15, and I'm not terribly well versed in the in this, but in discussions with the Rasmussen Foundation, they said that's fairly standard for a requirement for tax exempts to participate in programs, is that they undergo audits, and any organization with less of a smaller budget, yearly budget, it would be cost prohibitive for them to do audits all the time.
Mr. Chairman, one final question though is the other part of the amendment I offered that I withdrew has added section G, adding on page line or new section G, the person. Did you or the department have a position?
Through the chair, in discussions with the Permanent Fund Division with Barton, the Permanent Fund Dividend Division has statutes in place that would take care of the issue of garnishment prior to that money being allocated.
So it's not necessary, that portion.
Yeah.
Any
other questions?
I have
a resident. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that would happen, this option would happen after garnishments. Is that what you just said?
My understanding is I should probably get the permanent fund.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, let's we'll hold off. Keep your question.
I never do the electronic, even under threat or coercion of the division, saying it's going to be months late, but it says right on there you're not eligible for it if you have any garnishments to even do the electronic, and so I don't think it's really a
point. On the record.
Ms. Barton, why don't you come on up and Lou, you can say it too. Just for committee's information, we do have on teleconference Diane Coughlin with the Rasmussen Foundation, Rob Ellen with the Rasmussen Foundation, and Chris Polk, is it? I was getting it wrong. Yeah, okay. Chris is here, Assistant Attorney General. Ms. Barton, did you hear Representative Schnell's question?
With Sharon Barton, Director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division, Mr. Chairman, Representative Schnell, would you repeat the question, please?
Well, it was basically just that if your check was garnished or a portion of your check was garnished, the garnishment. If somebody wanted to donate the rest of their fund, then is that how it would work? Or, I mean, basically the garnishment would take effect first versus any donation to any other educational organization.
Through the chair, Representative Schnell, 4323065 lays out the priority order for garnishments and assignments, this being an assignment, assignments take last priority after garnishments. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And this only applies to electronic, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Schnell, it only applies to those who apply online. That's
electronic,
correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I do have a question. Is it my understanding then that the Rasmussen Foundation is going to pay for this program for all 3 years, or is it just 1 year?
Chair, that's my understanding. It's all 3 years.
All 3 years.
For the whole term of the project, pilot project.
Okay.
But Diane Kaplan is better to speak to. Okay.
Diane, are you online?
I am for 60 seconds, but my plane is taking off. But yes, we will cover the first 3 years, and Rob Allen, our board member, can continue with you if you have other questions. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Just wanted to make sure I understood that. Okay, any other questions? Okay. Representative Wyrock, you withdrew your amendments. Let's take a look at the fiscal note here then. Let's see. Do we need to adopt this new fiscal note? Okay. We have a fiscal note dated. No date. It's
331.
Oh, yeah, that's wrong. 331-2006. It says that it's 393,000 statutory program receipts for the first year and then 163,000 thereafter. Sunsets in 2009. Okay, so we'll have to adopt that fiscal note with the bill. All right. Any other amendments, questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The suggestion of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division was to, on page 6, line 12, to change that date from June 30th, 2006 to August 15, 2006 in order to give them more time to notify the eligible applicants.
Can you state those dates again, please?
It would go from June 30th, 2006 to August 15th, 2006. Page 6, line 12.
Change June 30th to August 6th? Or August,
August 15th. August 15th.
Just to move that as a amendment to change that date. Any objections? Okay, then we'll make that change. Ripson Hawker?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. I'm on to the fiscal note from the Permanent Fund Division. Fund source is SDPRs. The analysis, however, does not acknowledge the offer of the Rasmussen Foundation, and in the fiscal note itself is our operative document. I'm not sure we shouldn't incorporate acknowledgement of the Rasmussen Foundation's commitment.
I agree. I think you're correct. I'm not sure how to show that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Martin.
I'm not sure what's in order, because it would be somewhat unusual maybe to attach it, to append it to the fiscal note as subsumed in the fiscal note, or to adopt it as a letter of intent to the committee.
I agree. I think a letter of intent attached to the fiscal note should cover that.
I would concur, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Would the committee accept the chairman writing a letter of intent attached to the fiscal note? Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think it can be pretty short and succinct to say we adopt it and incorporate herein the attached letter from the Rasmussen Foundation as part of the committee's movement of the bill.
If the committee is agreeable to that, the chairman's office will write that up and attach it to the fiscal note. Did you hear that, birthday girl? Okay. All right, good. Okay. Is there any... you guys tried to give her the day off, too. Was it Foster?
Yeah. One fiscal note, it says, it's the revenue programs and support at the bottom. It says that the department may not be able to meet the requirement to implement in 2007 because of the short lead time available. And then this sunsets after 2009. So this is only probably going to be in for 8 and 9, maybe. I mean, it doesn't seem like all the work we're going to go through, like if they should extend the deadline to 10 or something. It seems to make more sense to me. Whatever you want to do.
Chair, Representative Foster, the intent putting in the temporary application process was to speed up the putting that in, the new CS was to speed up the process to make 2007 happen. And so we're fairly certain that with this, they can make the 2007 goal with this language, and then they can write the regs after. I believe the reference in the fiscal note is to having to write the regs and the comment period, and that would take 90 days.
I don't know. You know, this seems like such a humanitarian thing that I just don't see. I mean, I'd rather see 5 or 7 or 10 years on this. You know, it's a charitable thing, and it's not like we're going to get taken advantage of somebody. Rasmussen Foundation is available there, and then people start checking off, and once the program gets started, then it's sunset, and here we are back here again. You know, I've been here 18 years, I've heard some of these sunsets, like the barbers and hairdressers and engineers, I've heard them like 5 or 6 times already here, you know. I mean, we had to make the years longer instead of wasting our time here. I bet about a quarter of our time here every year is going through the same old stuff we went through 2 years ago. But that's my own opinion, yeah.
Oh, good point. Oh, you on that point? Okay, go ahead.
It might be nice to have a short sunset, though, Director Foster, because we could add some more excused absences by the time permanent fund dividends to happen.
Okay. Representative Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can't follow that up very well. I need to talk about the fiscal note, if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
If somebody could tell me why it cost $200,000 to change our mainframe and server for web application changes.
Ms. Farber?
For this one little time. But.
Sharon Barton, Permanent Fund Dividend Division Director. Regrettably, our payroll system is a combination of three or four patched together systems. We are about to redo that in another couple of years, but in the meantime, we're stuck with it. So to write the programs to capture the information from the applications, put it, get it into the payroll or the payment piece of our system in a way that will properly collect it and subtract it from the proper dividends, and to make the changes to our online application, and that's another set of programs, and our yet a third set of applications that must be rewritten as well. Regrettably, we estimate. I caution to say we do not have a bid on it or haven't asked for a quote, but we estimate it will be $200,000. We hope it can be done for less, but that's our best guess.
Seems like an awful lot of money to me, Mr. Chairman. That's one full-time person, maybe one and a half people for a whole year at a pretty good salary. Or eight legislators. That'd be a good deal, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, hopefully that is on the high side, as Mark said. Representative
Schnell? I guess, and that leads probably to a different question, but I'd like to maybe address Representative Foster's. The Rasmussen Foundation has gracefully decided to fund this program, and they're going to fund X amount of dollars. And so I think if we extended the date out, then we're saying that we're going to incur that cost. And I don't know if we're ready at this time. I mean, I agree with you on the shortness of some of the sunset dates. That it seems like we spend a lot of time on bills every year, hearing bills that really deal with the sunset dates. So I agree with you in that aspect, but I know that Rasmussen has, like I say, gracefully elected to pay for this out of their funding, and so I think that we should stay with their date that they put on, and then we address it in 2 years.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but I think what we do a lot of times is create a constituency. And in this case, let's say some of the beneficiaries include the United Way and then the Cub Scouts of Juneau under Bruce Wyrock. And then 3 years from now, when it sunsets, these people are going to be here lobbying for us to keep this thing going. I mean, we're just creating headaches for us out there. And then so what's going to happen? Well, we're going to have to go ahead and extend it.
I agree with
Yep. No, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Richard Foster. Richard Hawker.
Rhetorically on this one, I take Representative Foster's comment very much to heart, and I think someplace I read in this package it said there could be 600 qualifying organizations. Mm-hmm. And think about this. Think about this for a second.
Yeah.
Here we are. You know, this isn't my wife. She does our permanent fund dividends, and she goes and hits that little box online, and it says you want to contribute to somebody, and it drops 600 names down that list. You know, I just have a real hard time thinking this is a real effective and efficient way to conduct state business. But, I'm going to support, again, the Rasmussen Foundation wants to make a run at this. I'll let them do it. But I got to tell you, this just doesn't seem to make an awful lot of sense to me.
Okay. All right. Representative
Joe. You know, one of the things we look for as we go through budgets is whether or not people in the state have any skin in the game. You know, there's a lot of organizations that come to the state for money. And I would suspect that should we ask for it, we can get printouts to see what Alaskans are contributing. And that's going to have great value at this table. And granted, you know, if it comes back that there's 50 people that utilize it, that's going to tell us something, and in 3 years we probably won't want to do it. But on the other hand, you know, if Alaskans are contributing in the millions, that should tell us something too.
Pros and cons to this program, and so let's Richardson Foster.
I'll go ahead and move HB 496 out of committee with the attached footnotes notes with the budget recommendations. And you say a letter,
yes, attached the tents and the newly adopted fiscal note. Yes. Okay. Any objections? See none. Bill passes out of committee. So that wasn't the best bill you've ever seen.
No. I think it has good intentions, Mr. Chairman, but I think a future legislator is going to have fun with this one.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, next bill up is House Bill 306. This is, I think, Representative Stoltz, the staff, was here. Where are we at? It was first heard April 25th. Public testimony was taken and closed. Bill's back here before us. Okay, we do have some. Do we have amendments? Did you have time to?
I'm not going to do them. Thank you.
No amendments. Okay. 10 fiscal note. All right. Anything else need to do on this?
If I just may put a comment on the record, sir.
Okay.
You know, I've been all over the board on this particular bill. I've had some concerns listening to the Outdoor Council, listening to the folks doing it. But, you know, I guess I'm coming down erring on the side of moving the bill. This is a very positive, you know, direction of economic development in the state, winter tourism, skiing, and development of a major commercial ski resort in the north end of South Central Alaska is going to be a particularly beneficial to my own district with a ski resort. I think the plan that has been contemplated here has been vetted through a public process. They've been upfront with what they're doing. You know, I just don't see any skullduggery. And you know, to that end, you know, again, I'm going to come down erring on the side of this because I think the process has been correct. I, you know, recognize not everyone's going to agree with it, but you know, we do make choices between the uses and dedication of our land. You know, even when you look at Eagle River here, or Eagle River, that would be my district. But Eagle Crest Ski Resort here in Juneau, it exists only because of a land entitlement, of the land entitlement process to communities. So again, I after a lot of pondering, I come down supporting this bill, and I just appreciate the chance to put a few of those rationale points on the record, sir. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Rest at home.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too would echo Representative Hawker's comments. I also would like to make sure that everyone realizes that this has to be voted on by the qualified boroughs of Mat-Su, and to me that's a real a positive piece. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I no objection.
Right. That's a critical point here, I think, Rick. Anyone else? And if there are any questions, Dick Milas and Ron Swanson with the Mat-Su Bureau online. Richard Weir?
I'm still not comfortable with Section 1 and the findings. To me, that's a presumptive statement that I can't really... I'm not comfortable in endorsing those findings. I just think it's consistent with our past practice of removing findings. I would be amenable to doing that, and I'm not sure what Representative Stoltz's position is on Section 1.
Mr. Chairman, it would be consistent with the past practices committee. Again, this is the Mat-Su Borough's bill, and it's our job to make statements of fact and finding. I would be amenable to a motion if that's to strike that section.
Section one.
Yes, that's just the finding, Mr. Chairman.
Would you like to make that motion?
If yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so your motion is to delete Section 1?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing none, section one is deleted, which is the findings of fact.
I appreciate the sponsor's work on this. I know that he's been doing a lot of work on this for his own constituents in his district. Just to Representative Hawker's comments, that one thing that's different is the Eagle Crest was paid for almost exclusively by city sales tax, and so the local government and head people stepped up and paid for all those things without ADA, without anything. So maybe someday when we run short on funds in the state, if we ever do, we're going to have to start looking at those things to local communities to fund their own kinds of things statewide. But I'm going to support the bill. Not again.
Very good. Representative Tula.
Well, the other thing is that Eagle Crest isn't along a wild river and wasn't part of a public use management area. So just also for the record, you know, this public use area was established so that there would remain some access to the river and it would be in the public's hands. Fishing, hunting, just hiking, being up there using the river. And now this is being done just to pass the land on to a private developer. The borough's not going to be able to get enough for it. There's no upfront payment, is what I understand. It's some kind of a joint venture. The development of the land and how it's going to be done hasn't been public. The people that I've heard from uniformly, with exception from a couple of the borough members, oppose this. There was a large outcry in the valley against this. The borough has 3,000 acres that they can develop. They don't need this small river corridor that's been preserved. They already got 160 acres of the corridor, and 20 of it was for access. So in my opinion, this completely undermines the public use area that was supposed to be in place. There's a land exchange going on where this land, this small amount of land, is going to be exchanged, at least my understanding is, for quite a large amount. It's an incredibly valuable piece of land. I'm for the development of the area. I voted for the ADA bond, but this is just dead wrong to do this way. This 200-acre strip was meant for multiple use, and it's in the heart of the valley. So I believe it shouldn't be done. I thank, you know, the representative from Juneau for removing the findings section, because that's just dead wrong, too. The public use area would not have allowed a disposal, and it's not within the intent. I don't see the covenants. I don't see the protection for the river. And yesterday when I was, by the way, you guys are pretty boring on TV. I was while I was on the couch, I talked.
Any suggestions?
I talked personally with Rod Arno of the AOC, and they are adamantly opposed to this because they can see what's going to happen to the hunting. When you see the encroachment, people are not going to be happy about the traditional use of that corridor. So I want to thank the sponsor because I think he's worked really hard on it, and I know that I can count in this committee. So with that, I just totally object to it, but I don't think I have the votes to object to it passing from the committee. So I'll wait and fight that battle later on. But this is not the right thing to do to this very beautiful, very historic use area. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the remarks of my colleague from Juneau, who has a lot of history in this. As we mentioned in the previous meeting, her father was the architect of this legislatively, and it's certainly something I've had some concerns about. This is one of those issues, as many of us do, facilitate something that that the local government asks for, and it's their top priority. I don't often agree with my local government, and I don't have total concurrence on this, but the amendment with the local vote provided comfort to me, and the setback was an issue important to me, and the local vote actually was certainly an important safeguard for me because I don't have I don't have 100% confidence in local government, but it is their top priority, and it's I think they know I have some misgivings about some of the ways they do things, but this is I think with the setbacks, I would not be pushing this bill. I would not be supporting this bill without setbacks in it, because it's an area my family has used that area since there's been access up there. I'm going to be following this process closely locally. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Very good. Any other comments, questions?
I
want to welcome Representative Kelly. He came for the donuts. Representative Jewell.
Just an observation, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I'm not saying this at anyone on this committee, but it is an observation because I've seen it sometimes. But, you know, in the northern part of the country, where we rely on much of our resources to get developed, it's okay. Everybody's stampede, let's go, let's go. But when we get closer to people, it's not in my backyard. So I just find that an interesting observation.
So true.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else? If not, Richard Foster.
Yeah, a quick comment. I've always found it intriguing when I see Coring voting with Gara, no on a bill. And now we've got the outdoor council with the environmentalists voting no on something. But anyway, I'll go ahead and move on behalf of my good friend Concerno here. I'll go ahead and move this bill out of committee. HB 306 with attached fiscal notes with individual recommendations.
Okay, motion. Any objections at this time? Seeing none, bill passes out of committee. Okay, we are done. Until this afternoon, and this afternoon right. We'll be back on PPT
at 1:30.
Is that right?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. I'm really back.
No, I'm not sure about tomorrow morning just yet. I think let's wait until this afternoon.
Well, that's right. We're on 24.
Yeah, I would say that.
We're on the clock.
Did you get one, Seth?
Well, I don't know if he wants to do PPT this after or tomorrow morning yet.
No.
So we'll.
No.
And yeah, I don't think we have any bills at this time. So it may not be tomorrow. Okay, with that, we're adjourned to 1:30.
We missed your view from 30,000 feet.